Hi, I'm John Burton.
And I'm Elizabeth Tracy. Thank you so much for joining me and talking to me about your book. Maybe you could just start by telling me what's the title of the book?
Thank you for your interest. The book is called Taking Charge of Your Health, How to Get the Best Healthcare as You Age.
Now, here sounds like a very broad topic. What do we need to know as we age about getting the best healthcare?
There's a lot you need to know, and the more you know, the better you are able to get high quality health care. That's all because medicine has become so very complicated and so very specialized that each person must understand the system and know how it works and know how to ask the right questions of all of the health care providers you see.
This is an awfully big responsibility to shift to patients, to people who may not be necessarily trained in how to go about accessing this information. What would you say are some of the fundamental rules?
Fundamental rules are to know your illnesses, know the extent of the illnesses, know what medications you're on, know how they work and what their purpose is, and to always have that with you and share with any other health provider. Whenever you're prescribed a new medicine, ask why, what's it for, does it interact with any of your other medications? To be able to assert yourself in situations such as in the hospital so that you can get the answers to your questions and know what's best for you. At times of transfer, say from hospital to a rehabilitation center or hospital to home, that's a very critical period. Older people are especially vulnerable. So the more you know about that, the more you can help this complex system perform the way it's supposed to. So it's about empowerment of individual patients.
Many patients, of course, especially as they age, are reluctant to question physicians because they think it seems disrespectful or they're questioning the authority of the physician. How would you suggest queries can be framed so that the best outcome is possible?
You're absolutely right. You don't want to be offensive. On the other hand, asking questions thoughtfully, to me, is very good. So I always encourage my patients to come with a list of questions that they have concerns about, 1 through 5. And we then look at those and decide what priority we should adjust to, and then try to deal with them. And then, of course, I, as the provider, would have questions too. What's happening with your blood pressure? What's happening with the evaluation of the intestinal tract? Things like that. But it's a mutual coming together. In my view, it's always good to come with someone because two people hear things better than just one. And a lot of information is exchanged there. And it's always appropriate to say, well, why do I need this medicine? What is it for? Do I really need that x-ray? What will we learn from the CAT scan? Could we just wait and watch, and if things don't get better, do it? Those kinds of things, to me, create a dialogue out of respect and understanding.
In medicine, of course, we're all looking forward to the advent or the promulgation of electronic medical records as somehow helping all of us to achieve these sorts of objectives. What would you say to patients right now that they can do to help to facilitate their own record keeping?
I think they need to write things down on a piece of paper. If they have access to a computer and can put it on a thumb drive, that's even better until the whole world gets there. But recording what your main problems are, when certain events occurred, what your medications are, what they're for, what allergies you have, and then that can easily be put on a note paper. Don't be afraid to ask the doctor what's on your mind.
Would you suggest that people should ask for copies of their test results so that they can keep a record on their own?
I think it's fine. What I do is generate the note, dictate the note with the patient there so that they're hearing exactly what we've been talking about. And they may say, well, wait a minute, that birthday's wrong there. I'm not that old, something like that. But it's a chance to kind of reinforce what you've been talking about.
We are so very fortunate, of course, in our society. We know that the fastest growing segment of our population are octogenarians, those aged 80 and older. What would you say to that specific group with regard to their own self-management of their care? And if you could go to the other end of, I'm going to call the spectrum of adulthood, so let's start with 30-year-olds, what would you say to allow them to successfully age to be in their 80s?
Well, I think we're all creatures of habit, and the more you have developed good habits, the better you are at aging. I think you need to get started on that as soon as possible, but you always can start it even if you're late in your life. The 20, the 30, the 40-year-old person ought to begin to understand the importance of diet. They ought to understand the importance of exercise. They ought to be able to control their weight. They ought to know that there's only a downside to smoking and learn those behaviors. But even if you're 50 or 60 or 70, you can still get benefit from changing those behaviors. And in the 80-year-old group, where I spend most of my time, it's about understanding your illness, about really understanding how one illness relates to another, how medications for one can impact. And it's about working with your doctor on what I would call judgment. By that I mean a dialogue that suggests you don't have to do everything in the book just to prove a point. You need to have a discussion about it. Because doing certain diagnostic things for an 85-year-old has a potential downside effect. So this morning, dealing with a patient who was 90 and having classic symptoms of a heart arrhythmia and heart failure, you really had to put that into context. This person was living alone. They were frightened about losing their independence. They were totally fearful of the usual diagnostic things. So you can't just jump in there and say, do this or that. You have to work with that person, deal with their fears, and do the best that's possible. About judgment, it's about understanding the sick human being, it's about relating to that person, it's about honoring their judgments and wishes, and not dictating.
He used some phraseology in talking about your book that I thought was really pretty interesting. You said that medicine largely responds to acute situations to try to avoid mortality. But today, we have chronic situations, and we're trying to avoid morbidity. Can you expand just a little bit on that?
The current healthcare system is designed totally about mortality, survival, how long you can live, acute medicine. And as the book points out, that whole paradigm has changed. We now have multiple chronic illnesses. And so it becomes more an issue of management. How do you maintain the best function you can with several overlapping problems? I see that as an exciting, challenging, thoughtful area of medicine. It's all about empowerment. It's all about education. The more patient, the more the patient's family know and can help, the better off it is. Because you may elect not to have a diagnostic procedure. You may elect to watch, wait, and worry a little bit. That's perfectly fine as long as there's a partnership and understanding. It's not unlike the old country doctor, but doing so in a modern world with an incredibly complex resource diagnostic therapeutically.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.